Yeah, have we covered all the sticky questions?
Yeah, I think we got all the sticky questions covered there.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter what tape you use. Like, usually there's like a secret black market for where everyone's, don't use that tape, use my tape. My tape's better.
Yeah.
Oh my God, have you heard about this tape people are using? Oh my God, it's so great. And what I like to do is I just ride the wave. Oh, so-and-so's got the good tape. Let me try some of that. And then you're like, okay, yeah, that wasn't that bad. And guess what? I haven't found a single type of tape ever in my entire history that doesn't eventually get sticky and gross. So that just means
that's always
that,
the promise, huh?
Yeah. We're in a bit of a sticky situation this week.
Nice. I like it.
You like that?
That's a good one. It was just it was probably like 10 days ago. I played a funeral that I was kind of psyched about it being an indoor funeral. Usually these are outdoor affairs, right?
Yes.
And so mostly I was excited because that meant I wouldn't have to be exposed to the elements myself. And I thought, my pitch will stay pretty regular, you know? So I got there early, kind of tried to play in cold, as it were, you know, knowing that I was going to play at the beginning of the thing and then an hour later I was going to play again. And it, you know, once the thing starts, it's not like you can go far enough away in the building to stay warm, you know? I felt like I was in a decent spot to be able to just strike in and be ready to go. But when it came time for Amazing Grace at the end, da-da, ooh, that D had crept. And I'm trying to remember now, I'm pretty sure it had crept up. The D was unpleasantly high. Da-da-da. And so when I went up to the F, da-da-da-da, when I was up there, I put a lot of pressure on my lower hand, and I forced the tape that was on my D hole down just a little bit. And it got me through. It got me through. It was a little better the next time I hit a D. But
Jim, you didn't tell me I should have brought a barf bucket to this one. Oh my God.
But I recognize that's a risky practice to rely on, you know? The chances of me then playing the next D in the tune and having that tape gone all the way over the hole or not having moved at all, or, you know, it was like I was just on a wing and a prayer, squeezing that tape, trying to make it slide down a little bit. How crazy am I?
Did the
Is
D
there anybody
creep
else
up
out
in,
there?
The D didn't creep up in tuning. The tape slipped.
Who knows?
Nah.
Something went wrong, and squeezing that tape to force it in the other direction kind of saved it just for that moment. I mean, it wouldn't have lasted more than a few tunes, you know? It got me through to the end, and I could drive away. But am I the only one? I want to know if there are any other pipers out there who have done emergency while playing tape adjustments to try to save their tuning.
Please don't leave that in the comments. I don't want to hear that. Oh, God.
At the beginning of the comment, right, for Jim.
Yeah. Jim's eyes only.
Yeah.
Or Andrew, please disregard.
Mm.
Yeah. So we don't want to get in that situation, right? And certainly if we set up our bagpipes correctly and we think things through and we plan ahead, we should never be in the situation where the D changes wildly in tuning, right, on us. That's not really a thing. Now, maybe the overall chanter pitch might change on me. You know, maybe I warmed up too long and I got my pipes tuned up at a high pitch. And then I sat for a while and then I start playing again. And I'm like, oops, screw that one up, because now my chanter is much lower in pitch than the drones. I get it. That kind of stuff will happen, but hopefully we should never be in the situation where the D is just wildly out. Did you maybe forget to check it?
Maybe, or maybe I just didn't check closely enough. Like, I kind of played a little bit because I was trying to stay cold. So I might've just played quickly and been like, okay, that was good enough. I'll not play too much more because I don't want to get stuff, you know, wet and warm.
Yeah. So anyway, and then it's also deeply disturbing to me that you're able to move the position of the tape with your
finger. Let's just say that
finger.
I have an incredibly strong grip. So it was great tape, but I'm just very strong.
No, I don't think that's probably what it is. You probably
no,
have that
it was very
gooey,
old tape.
Yeah,
it
you have
been
that
there for
gooey,
a long time.
Disgusting tape. Yeah.
Yep. I like using gaff tape, but after it's been sitting for a while, it does get, it's the gooeyest of tapes after it's been there for a minute, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So are we going to talk about tape?
Let's talk about tape.
Let's talk tape. Let's talk tape.
Absolutely. Tape
talk. Jack talk tape.
Jack can't talk tie.
Oh, no, Dina. Jack can talk tie. Jack talk tie very well.
Jack talk tape. Okay. So first question that we have to address is, it's not really a question. It's more of a statement. Tape is evil and only for the weak. That's the first thing we got to put out there. Right? You should... if you buy a good chanter and a good reed, you shouldn't need any of that dang tape.
Right. I hope that's not true. I've had a few of those brief moments where, not when the chanter reed first goes in, but 48 hours after it's been in, where everything's really playing well and I don't need tape on anything. But that's never lasted for long. It's been, you know, very short.
So that is a fallacy, that thing I just put out there. Okay, so all chanters need tape. There's not a single one that doesn't. And in the history of the future, right? Going into the future forever, if you are playing a bagpipe, you will need tape on your chanter.
Established.
It's never going to change. The laws of physics require this to be true. Maybe there'll be some sort of a contraption, maybe some sort of surgical procedure that can make it so that no moisture comes out of your lungs when you breathe into your pipes and the temperature of your breath is matched to room temperature. Like maybe in 1,000 years, there'll be some sort of like weird device. Or maybe we'll be silicon-based life forms by then. Like maybe the human race will have died out and been replaced by some sort of silicon-based, machine-based entities, but they're still, you know, interested in being creative. And because bagpipes are the best instrument, these machines are running around playing the instrument. And maybe for the machines, it would be different. But for humans, physics demands the necessity of chanter tape. Can we review why that is? Can we review why that is?
Yeah,
really
let's
quickly?
Talk about why that is. Yeah.
Okay. So basically, even if you could find a chanter and reed combination that was perfectly tuned, no matter what you do as you play, your chanter is going to change in tuning. It's just the way that the world works. There's two variables that are always changing on you. And by the way, not actually always, but just always for simplicity of discussion here. So the temperature of your breath is different than the room temperature surrounding you as you play. That's true in all situations with possibly one exception, which is if the environment you're playing in actually matches your body temperature.
Okay. We'll call that the magic school bus situation, where if you accidentally got shrunk down and sent into Arnold's lungs and you were playing your bagpipes in there, it's going to match almost perfectly.
Right, exactly. Which sounds like a really horrifying situation to be in, especially some bagpipers' lungs. Yikes. You know? But anyway, so the temperature is always going to be changing. So for example, right now I can tell you it's 71 degrees in my room. The air coming out of my lungs is approximately 100 degrees. So that means as I'm playing, there's going to be a 30-degree change in the sound of my pipes. It's going to be changing, right? And then, by the way, that might, once my pipes get up fully to close to 100 degrees, they might stay there as long as I don't stop playing, right? But then there's another element of the air coming out of my lungs, which is highly saturated, moist air. So now moisture is going to work its way into the bagpipe over time as well. It'll be in the form of humidity, and then possibly at a certain point, depending on conditions, we'll get condensation in there as well. If you take a sponge, a super dry sponge, right, and you introduce moisture to it, what happens to the sponge?
Soaks it up, gets softer.
It gets softer, yep.
Changes
what
shape
else?
A little bit.
Yeah, the shape literally changes in a sponge, right? And a cane chanter reed is going to be much the same way, in the sense that it'll actually change shape as moisture works its way into the reed. Now, it probably doesn't change shape visibly to the eye, but it definitely changes shape. And then it's going to vibrate ever so slightly differently. It might even vibrate better. But anyway, that's going to be always changing. When we play our bagpipes, it's always changing. It's never going to stop. It's always going to change. It's just the way that it is. And so, therefore, even if you somehow magically got a perfectly tuned chanter, it's not going to stay in tune, depending on environment, depending on how long you've been playing, and so on and so forth. And therefore, we need a way to fine-tune our chanter notes.
And at present, the best way is tape.
And it's probably the best way there will ever be. Yeah. By the way, you have these keyed instruments like clarinets and flutes, and like saxophones and stuff like that. They don't use tape, which is really kind of interesting, you know, but there's some key differences there. For example, a clarinet is not hooked up to, or even an oboe, right? An oboe reed is very similar to a bagpipe reed.
It is,
okay?
Yeah.
But a bagpipe is hooked up to literally a different environment, right?
Because of the bag situation.
That's right. So inside the bag is literally a different environment. And I suppose inside the mouth of an oboe performer, there's an environment in there. Probably not that dissimilar from the environment inside the bag. But an oboe player has direct access to that reed. And what you'll find is oboe players, especially great oboe players, are probably extremely skilled in achieving some of the fine tuning that they need just with embouchure control. And they're probably able to get that. And I wouldn't be surprised if a great oboe player knows, like, yikes, if I hit that F sharp in the third register or whatever, I'm going to have to, I know in advance, right, through experience that it's going to be sharp. So I have to feather the blowing on it or change my embouchure to get it to come out flatter or whatever, right? So because you have direct access, right? If we had direct access to our chanter when we were playing with our mouth, it might be a different story.
Well, I might even stipulate that we could probably build up a skill set to do similar things via the bag if we didn't also have drones attached, which would also be affected by increasing or decreasing the pressure.
Yes. And then there's a logical error with that. So what Jim is talking about is what a lot of pipers will do, right? For example, me, if I hear that my D is sharp during Amazing Grace, I instinctually am probably going to change my blowing to try to fix that D. But the problem is, now if I'm in the situation where every D I play, I have to change the blowing, there's a problem. Because what about the notes on one side of D or the other? What about the note that comes before D or the note that comes after D? If I know I have to change my blowing every time I come to a D, okay, well, the note that comes before D is now going to be underblown at least a little bit. You can't instantly change the pressure of your bag. It's not a thing. So
they'll
now notes
kind of
on...
get into it, get out of it thing.
So now, even if you could change your blowing to nail the tone of the D, that means by definition, you're sacrificing the tuning of two other notes in order to achieve that. And so it doesn't, you know, it doesn't actually work out. What we need to achieve as pipers is, generally speaking, perfectly steady blowing, right? And then we need to change the tuning of the notes in order to get to that. And then I'm thinking, and I don't know, we'd have to get a great super high level oboe player here to discuss. But I'm thinking the reason that oboe doesn't probably need to tape holes, probably can't because there's lots of keys on an oboe. So it would get kind of weird, right? But the reason they can get away with that is probably at its root due to the fact that they can directly access the instrument. But anyway, so you hear a lot of that, less of it as the years go by. But I remember when I was a kid, it was still lots of people saying, you know, I don't want tape on my chanter. That's stupid. I don't like that.
Yeah. I mean, I get the appeal, you know. It seems like, wouldn't it be nice if you could just plug it in and have it work?
It's a la-la land. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's la-la land, and we don't even really want that. We want direct access to change the tuning of those notes so that we can continue to get our tuning finer and finer. Most pipers don't actually really understand that. Our tuning algorithm course is something to look at if you're interested in what real bagpipe tuning is. But it's a continual process. It's a continual process, continuing to try to get all those intervals locked in better and better. But anyway, so there you go. So that's the first thing. Next question that we should cover is, how does tape work? How does it change the tuning of notes?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, if we think about any of us who's seen a bagpipe chanter, we've probably noticed that the tape is always coming, you know, it's attached from the top of the hole moving down.
Yeah.
Not
is that
from the
true?
Bottom moving up.
Do you always see that? So sometimes you see someone's chanter and they got the tape on the bottom of the hole.
What's going on there when that happens, Andrew?
Yeah. So what's going on there, generally speaking, is a misunderstanding of how tape works. Okay. So, and then are there some freak instances where somehow by taping the bottom of the hole, you get a beneficial effect? I suppose, I'm sure.
Probably, right? Yeah, yeah, it's probably some situation.
Yeah, I will say that no one I know does that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people. So no one I know is using tape in that way. That I know of. Who knows? Maybe one of these people that I know has a secret trick they're not telling me about. But we don't really do that. The tape will apply to the top of a note. Okay, so this is an old chanter from one of the years that I played in Inverary, and I'll try and hold this up. You can see, it might interest you to see that there's tape on every single note, okay? But also, You can see the tape is coming from the top of the notes on the chanter. Cool? And why is that? Okay, it comes from the top of the hole because what we are doing with tape actually is we're changing the length of the column of air. What we're doing with tape is actually the same thing we do with our drones. So if we need to tune our drones, what do? We lengthen or shorten the drone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if we need to do our if we need to tune our chanter, it's the same. We're going to lengthen or shorten the chanter itself with tape. So when you apply tape to the top of the note, what are we doing? We are lengthening or shortening if we add tape to a note.
I think that visual is helpful because now I can, as I look at it, I can imagine, okay, the column of air, say I want it to move all the way down to the C hole. So it's moving that far, but then that's a little sharp. So I want it to move just a little bit further. A little bit of tape makes it so that column of air has to get just a little bit longer, not so long to become a B, but just a little longer than where it usually would sit for a C, for example.
By the way,
was that tape from the bottom on your high A?
Yeah.
What's going on here?
What's going on with that? I think you might find that the high G tape is actually impinging on the bottom.
Oh, interesting.
It might also be I didn't notice it. It doesn't seem like something I would do, but it might also be that the hole is so large that a little bit of tape on the bottom, who knows?
Well, that would make the hole smaller without making the column of air longer.
Correct.
And so I guess that could make sense. Maybe that would make your sound a little bit quieter or something without taking the pitch down, huh?
Yeah, there you go. I mean, who knows? Or maybe I probably inherited that chanter. It was like probably a backup chanter that I got at some point. And then, maybe some sneaky guy put some tape on there.
If it was something you inherited too, in my experience with inherited chanters in bands, often you've got carving going on in the holes and it's not always clear what the thought process was. So maybe you've got an oval hole there and it was just being turned back into a circle.
Yes, exactly. So anyway, the basics of tape work, how tape works is from the top of the hole down, that's what's going to change the tuning. You'll notice that even though this has mysterious tape on the bottom, it also has tape on the top.
Mm.
It's not focusing very well. But there's also tape on the top. Yeah. Mm. And by the way, there's even tape down here in the low G holes. Yeah. And there's no tape here on the bell, though. And by the way, this is a chanter. I think the last time I played this would have been in like 2017 or something. So much so that the tape has obviously dried out and remorphed. But you could see, again, tape on every note. The low A has, I did put some tape along the bottom, probably because the hole got so big on me that it was hard to get the burls to sound good.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably where that comes from.
I'm trying to remember now. Has it come up in a conversation before? Was it something that I read, or maybe it was in one of the dojo courses that you advise just having a ring of tape in position for every note?
Of course, definitely.
And
that's what's, yes, even if you're not going to use it, even if there's no tape required for a note, I still have tape on the note, right? And then what you'll notice is, maybe not so much on this chanter. There's one little piece. But I would typically keep some extra tape on the bell of the chanter as well.
Yeah.
In case one of my pieces of tape dies on me, I have a backup with me. So like I don't have to carry a roll of tape around with me.
The bell becomes the roll.
That's right. So and like how many extra pieces of tape are you going to need? Hopefully if you're well prepared, you're not going to need any of it. And then you'll notice that this chanter, this is probably from 2019 or so in Inverary, but you'll notice this has actually a fairly decent amount of tape on every single hole, right? If I actually had a hole with no tape on it at all, that would start to make me a little bit nervous because what would happen if that note ended up flat somehow?
There's nowhere to go.
There's nowhere to go. That's exactly right. And
if
so,
it's sharp, you can tape it. But if it's flat, you're stuck.
That's right. That's right. So I would usually, maybe not so much on my solo pipe, but certainly on my band instrument, you want a little bit of tape on all of those notes. Not a lot. You want a little bit of tape on all those notes so that you have the ability to go up or down as need be should something happen. There's lots of potential scenarios where notes are going to go flat on you. That would be, if it was cold and wet. And then there's lots of potential scenarios where notes might go sharp on you, but that's typically no big deal as long as you don't have a note that's almost entirely covered in tape. And then to add more would be a disaster. And then, of course, for many of us listening right now, you're getting a little bit of high G, the fear of the high G, right?
Yeah.
Because sometimes that gets so covered in tape that you actually really can't apply anymore.
Yes. That's my life right there. But to just to make it really clear, this is not a situation where you just have tape in the blank space between every hole. You're saying put a little tape on every hole so that you could take it off later to sharpen that note a bit.
That all depends on your approach. So I would start with, you know, I think my basic advice for someone setting up a chanter would be to start with tape above every hole, but not covering any of it yet. This would be my generic advice. So just start with tape at the ready, nice, clean, fresh tape above every hole, and then start playing the chanter, and then add tape on as necessary to those notes, right? That would be my basic advice. And what you usually find is the high G needs a little bit. That's usually the first one to get some tape. The D usually needs a little bit of tape. And then you could be pretty good to go from there without needing to horse around with other notes too much. As you get more advanced, you might do some nerdier things. For example, I would never set up my band chanter without some tape on the bottom hand. So I usually start with a little bit of tape already on the low A, B, C, and D a little bit. Because I know when I travel to Scotland, I just know the bottom hand's going to bottom out on me a little bit. So, you know, you want to already kind of be ready for that. But that comes from experience, and I wouldn't have started that way. You have to learn that lesson 147 times, and then the 148th time, you're like, you know what? I'm just going to start with some tape on the bottom and, you know, get my chanter all balanced up because I know it's going to have to move. It's the same thing we would do in the Oran Mór days, where we had a grade one pipe core going over to Scotland. We know what's going to happen when we get there. And so we would start with a tape configuration that doesn't leave us between a rock and a hard place when we land overseas. So you could get more advanced with it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's all. But I wouldn't recommend that for starters. I would recommend setting up my chanter with fresh tape above every note and go from there.
Fresh. Clearly to avoid the gooey mess situation.
Yeah. Yep. So that's the next thing is what kind of tape should you use?
Yeah, I feel like I started with a mix of electrical tape and Scotch tape over the years I have tried.
What's the problem with Scotch tape? Scotch tape doesn't work.
Not at all.
Yeah, I don't know why, but it doesn't. I remember as a kid trying it and it was like, whoops, probably shouldn't have done that. It's also impossible to get off after a certain point. So yeah, Scotch tape, no good.
Speaking of inherited band chanters, I've had a couple that had like permanently adhered corners of Scotch tape. There's just, that's it. You can't, if you chip them off, you risk divoting the chanter.
Yeah. So anyway, basically electrical tape is what pipers have started to use over the years. This is actually, I think, car detailing tape or something like that.
Yeah,
I think
I've tried that kind, for.
It doesn't matter. Use whatever tape you like. The thing you have to understand about tape is, after a while, it gets gooey and gross, and you want to replace the tape.
Any tips or tricks for getting that goo off? I use Goo Gone now these days, or some kind of oil-based thing, but when I was a kid, people told me fingernail polish, and I think that was a load of BS. I don't think it actually does anything more than like water would do.
I like Goo Gone. I use it. As a matter of fact, if you turned the camera, you would see some right over there. Goo Gone is what I would use. And then I would, you know, periodically take all the tape off and just go over it with the Goo Gone and then get all the residue off. I know bore oil works really well too. And what I like about bore oil is you kind of know you're not damaging the chanter by using it. Like Goo Gone on a African blackwood chanter always makes me a little nervous for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know why. But anyway. Yeah, periodically, what you do is you take all the tape off, clean off the chanter, and then put it back on. And by the way, I have a trick for this. What we used to do is we used to make diagrams. But nowadays, in the era of the smartphone, right, take some good photographs of the tape configuration on your chanter.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, take some good photos with your smartphone. That way, you can confidently take all the tape off your chanter, get it all nice and clean. You can add your new tape on very carefully. and just use the pictures on your phone to match what the tape configuration used to be.
You get pretty darn close that way.
Oh, you'll get super close. Yep. And that's what I do. That's what I do. And, you know, what we do, like in Inverary, for example, usually a couple weeks before a big contest, you get an email from Stuart with a little PS, change your tape, you scallywags. Otherwise known as, you got to change your tape now so that we can fine tune the chanters without a bunch of sticky, slippy, gym style Amazing Grace tape, right? So you got to be a little bit organized about it so that when you're in a band, you don't get to your big performance and you have three members with tape slipping all over the place. And then we have a way that we do it in Inverary, sort of like a Inverary standard for how you'd actually apply your tape, which for us involves actually double layering. You can actually see it. You can actually see it sloppily done on this one. You know, there's actually two wraps, but you don't really need to do that. It depends on what tape you use, and you don't really need to do it. The main message here is, in a band, certainly, you got to be pretty organized with your tape and making sure that you don't get the big performances with people with old tape.
So that was another thing I wanted to ask you about, because when it comes to the tuning circle as a band, if you're the person moving tape, you want to be able to get to it, right? So do we want to have tape go all the way around the chanter? Because it seems to me like that might be difficult for the person doing the tuning to find the end and unwrap it and get it adjusted. Versus, you know, you could go to the other extreme and have just a little rectangle that's barely covering the front. That seems risky too, because like it'll start to fly off too soon.
It'll slip. Yeah. So it'll slip, and then it'll also fall into the hole, which you want that nice straight across. You want that nice straight across impact. So yeah, I mean, basically a well-organized band is going to have a way that they tape, and they're going to communicate that with the members so that they know when they retape their chanter, like, this is what we need. So that, to your point, if there's another guy coming around changing notes, he needs to be able to grab that tape and move it in a similar way for every person. The other thing, which is a story for another day, is set up your pipe band so that you don't have to change that much tape. I think that's what's going on in high-level bands, is everything is so stable and so predictable that you only have to move tape here and there. I mean, there's always going to be some tape to move, but you're not like running around completely retaping chanters. You know, you got to get the band stable enough and predictable enough that you do that to a minimum.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Have we covered all the sticky questions?
Yeah, I think we got all the sticky questions covered there.
Yeah. It doesn't really matter what tape you use. Usually there's like a secret black market for, where everyone's like, don't use that tape. Use my tape. My tape's better.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Have you heard about this tape people are using? Oh my God. It's so great. And what I like to do is I just ride the wave. Like, oh, so-and-so's got the good tape. Let me try some of that. And then you're like, okay, yeah, that wasn't that bad. And guess what? I haven't found a single type of tape ever in my entire history, which is coming up on 3 decades. No, it's surpassed 3 decades. I have 3 decades of history. I have never found a type of tape that doesn't eventually get sticky and gross. So that just means
that's always the promise, huh?
Yeah. But you know what they used to have back in the day? They used to use like wax. They used to use wax to get the pitch of the holes to change. But what's the problem with wax is that it's not movable, right? So you do have to kind of find a spot where it sounds decent, and then you pour your wax in. And by the way, does the wax fall out sometimes? Probably. Seems like it probably would, right?
Yeah.
So it seems like a really, really terrible way. And then my understanding is players like Donald McLeod and Donald McPherson, some of these guys, they were pioneers of the tape. And by the way, they probably weren't pioneers of tape because they thought of it. And that's probably when tape was like invented. And they're like, ooh, I wonder if I could use that on my chanter. And then what those players found, I mean, these are players that were known for just having this absolutely sublime tone. And they probably found that being able to move that tape around instead of being stuck with a certain configuration was invaluable, right? That's my understanding. I think I read that on Red Wallace's site, the story of kind of like how they were pioneers and they were able to achieve a great sound as a result. Yeah, it's an amazing technology. It will get sticky after several weeks, so just change it. The pros far outweigh the cons. And then just to reiterate the point from the beginning, I love tape, and if it's not already covering a note, it's at the ready in case I need it.
Hey, everybody. Andrew Douglas here from the Piper's Dojo, and I just want to say thanks so much for listening to today's iteration of the podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard here today, it would be super helpful to us and to a lot of bagpipers out there trying to find us if you could give us a top-notch review on whatever platform you're using to listen to this podcast, particularly Apple, iTunes, and Spotify, and things like that. Your review would be really, really helpful. So if you have a moment today, definitely go over there and help us out. Other than that, until we meet again on the podcast or somewhere else, thanks again for listening.